Richard Jefferson will join us. He of the Yes Network, as the Nets are coming off an just a horrible loss last night to the Pacers. They're going to play Charlotte Wednesday. They got the Knicks on Sunday, a game that you can see on Yes, and he will be part of the broadcast. And that is the great number 24.
Here you go.
Richard Jefferson.
I see him running the wing right now, catching the pass.
Hi, that's kid. Right. How you guys
doing?
For
the slam.
Today?
RJ.
Not as good as you, Richard. Not as good as you.
Oh, you're far better than me.
Somehow I doubt that.
I'm trying to be a very patient guy, Richard, but the Nets are 5-8. Kyrie's banged up. Obviously, we know about Durant. Caris LeVert's got his thumb issue. Should the Net fan be worried at this point in the season?
No, I don't think so. I think last year the team finished 500 and made the postseason. Vegas didn't actually have them too much different this year. I think if you look at the team that the Nets have and how they play, health is a big part of it. You got to be healthy. And Kyrie's played great basketball. Individually the first 10 games, and it's going to take some time for a level of team success. But I don't think they're that far off. I think you can look at a team like Portland that's struggling, that has their core unit back, and they're in the Western Conference. That's a far more concerning case of like, hey, what are we going to do here?
Mm. Richard, you look at the Eastern Conference right now. Who do you look at right now as the favorite to come out of the conference at this point?
I still like the Milwaukee Bucks. I think the Milwaukee Bucks, to me, have the most complete team. They have a great finisher inside. They have great playmakers. They have great speed. They have great defense. Doesn't mean that they can't be beat. But I look at teams in the Eastern Conference like a Philly, teams like Boston. And not that they are incomplete, but I think Milwaukee can play – if Milwaukee plays good, they can beat most teams, right, in the conference. Where I think Boston would have to play great in order to beat Milwaukee, and that's where that little bit of difference comes in.
All right, hey, let me ask you this about Boston, because Joe and I and most people in this town, we can't stand the Celtics, all right?
You probably don't like them either.
No, how – I mean, we know the deal.
You beat them in the playoffs twice, right?
Twice.
A couple of times.
Oh, yes,
couple,
we remember
few times,
well.
Few times.
And the second time was beautiful, just a nice clean sweep. But right now, look, there's no denying they're off to a great start without Kyrie Irving.
Why are
they off to a great start? Why are they 11-2? What is the biggest difference so far for this early start for the Celtics?
Well, the Celtics, one, they have a very good team. And a lot of times you try and compare. Or understand in Kyrie's first year there with Gordon Hayward hurt, do you remember the Celtics had the best record in the East? They were off to an amazing start. I don't like to just compare Kyrie to Kemba, because if that's the case, Kemba, what he did in Charlotte, and it starts to do this different dance. I think there's a lot of talent in that Boston locker room, right? And I think Kemba Walker is a very good scorer. And if you look at what they did with Isaiah Thomas, and then they had Kyrie. So to just go and try and compare point guard to point guard, especially when you look at the Brooklyn team isn't complete. The Brooklyn team has a large chunk of their cap space waiting on a 7-foot monster that's a two guard to come back. So, if you look at Boston, if Boston's healthy with Gordon Hayward, that is as good as their team is going to be. That is their team.
Mm.
In obviously a year, we're not trying to go too far out. In a year, that will be the Brooklyn Nets team. I think that's a better indication of like who is doing what and who is playing well.
No, but you understand. I mean, you're right, obviously. But these Celtic fans, they're unbearable, Richard. Mm. I mean, they are pointing at 11-2.
Right.
They're pointing at 5-8 for the Nets, and they are basically dancing on Kyrie Irving's grave right now. That's what the Celtic fan is doing.
They think Russell and Havlicek are still playing.
But let's be honest. These are the Celtic fans. These are the Celtics fans. If they would have gotten off to a terrible start, they'd still be mad at Kyrie. Like, Kyrie said he was going to be our point guard, right? Yeah. Kyrie was, blah, blah. He's the reason why we're off to a bad start. It's like, Kyrie's not here anymore. But, yeah, he said he was coming back. So, if you listen to the fans, you'll be sitting with the fans. So I don't really pay attention to the fan base. I just trying to evaluate. And Boston's a very good team. they're one of the top three teams in the Eastern Conference. I think they are playing better than expected. I think they've had a favorable schedule up until this part. And look at it. This is what Boston has done a very, very good job of. They've won games where, you know, Jason Tatum was 2 for 18. They've won games. They beat Toronto shooting 39%. They've had injuries to Gordon Hayward, to Jaylen Brown. So when you can win games shooting 39% with your best player going 2 for 18, when you've had injuries, when you can win games like that, that means that you're going, that you have a very, very good team. And so, you know, they can do all the dancing that they want, but ultimately this season, especially with the way the Nets have been beat up a little bit earlier, this season is not a great indication of who the Nets are going to be. Unfortunately, that's in the next year, most likely next season.
Toronto, without Leonard, how about you surprised by what they've been able to do? Siakam has been terrific so far.
Siakam has been, to me, I think, the most surprising individual player, because there were so many question marks. Like, yes, he has improved every year. Yes, he got his paycheck. Yes, he was, you know, the most improved player last year. But it is a very, very different. And I can speak from personal experience when Vince Carter was on my team and Vince would get the Bruce Bowen. Vince would get the number one defender, and then I would get the second, maybe third defender on most nights, depending on if they had somebody guarding Jason Kidd. So it's much easier to score when you have the second or third best perimeter defender guarding you. That being said, now every single team is going to every single game trying to stop Pascal Siakam, and he is still putting up outlandish numbers. He's rebounding, he's defending, he's scoring, and doing it all over the court. That, to me, shows that he heard, not heard, but is more of like, hey, you guys thought I was just a sidekick. I can be a star player in this league. And I wouldn't say he's a star yet, but I think he's on the verge of making his all-star game. I think he's on the verge of making his first all-star game. And also he is, because I don't like to say like in 20 games, in 15 games, you are a star, unless you're doing stuff like, you know, what James Harden is doing, unless you're doing stuff like Trae Young or Luka Doncic. Now, he's put up great numbers, and I think he'll be an all-star, but he's on the verge of being a star in this league.
And they're winning. I mean, they're 9-4.
Yeah.
That's the other thing about – and he's going to win – he's probably – and, you know, I know it's early. He's going to be the most improved player 2 years in a row, which is kind of a weird thing to win.
Well, and it's a weird thing to win, but a lot of it has to be situational. Sure. He wouldn't have been able to win Most Improved Player again if Kawhi had stayed.
Right.
He wouldn't have been able to do that. That would have been hard. But because Kawhi left, and then the eyeballs are on him, and Kyle Lowry is out, and Serge Ibaka has missed time. So the fact that they're still winning is very, very impressive. And Van Fleet has played well in spots for them in very, very crucial moments. So when I look at Pascal Siakam, it's more about that. Even though there's been subtraction, then that means that other people have to raise their level. And he has raised his level to a spot that you recognize that, wait a second, this guy is going to be an all-star if he continues playing like this. And if he keeps going after past that, he has a chance to be a star, like I said.
Let me ask you about Fred VanVleet, because he's another guy who's taken a big step this year with Toronto. And I could see him being a name down the road that the Knicks are eyeing. I think he's a free agent at the end of the year. That team desperately needs a point guard. They may find it in the draft. Who the heck knows? Who knows what the lottery is going to look like? But do you view Fred VanVleet as a guy who can be, you know, a top point guard in this league? What do you think the ceiling is for him?
I'm going to be really honest. I really, really like VanVleet. Dude's already won a championship. He's postseason tested. He's been in a bunch of postseasons. But it depends on what you have. Right. I think he falls in the line of follow me here, kind of like a Derek Fisher, right? Where he's a very, very good, heady point guard. Mm-hmm. He's not the guy that if you're like, hey, go lead us to a victory. No, but he can hit big shots. He can score 20 points on a given night. But I don't want to put him in the same class as a Kemba, as a Kyrie, as a Russell Westbrook, as a Chris Paul. Like, that is when we're saying that point guard position is the most difficult in the NBA at this very moment. And I don't know if he's at that tier. Doesn't mean that he can't continue to improve. Doesn't mean he can't lead a team to a championship. It doesn't mean that he can't be a great point guard for a lot of franchises. But it's kind of like that Malcolm Brogdon. Malcolm Brogdon is very, very good. I would take him as my point guard any day of the week, but you don't want to say that he's in that exact same class as the Kembas, the Kyries, the Russells, you know, the Steph Currys, like those class of point guards. That's just a little bit, that's one more tier, the Damian Lillard's. That's another tier up.
Talking to the great Richard Jefferson, what's your thoughts on the Knicks, Richard?
Well, my thoughts on the Knicks is that, you know, I don't focus too much on ownership. A lot of people like to focus on that aspect. I like to focus on the guys that are showing up every single day. Now, I understand that there's a trickle-down effect. I think the Knicks have some pieces, and I think they do have some talent. But the problem with the Knicks is more of their mentality. The sooner you change your mentality to a small market mentality and say, like, hey, we need to trade and get assets. We need to trade and get picks. We need to, you know, if we're just going to try and strike it rich every couple of years, that means you're going to live and die with the free agent market. And that's not a good place to live and die, right? And sometimes if you have, in my opinion, if you have assets, if you have multiple picks, if you have young talent, then you can make trades like Boston did to bring in Kyrie. You can make trades like the Lakers did to bring in Anthony Davis. But if you're constantly just trying to figure out the direction that you're going, it's going to take this process a lot longer. But understand, they signed in the last, you know, 15 years, they signed Amari, who was a big-time free agent. They signed Carmelo Anthony, which was a big-time free agent. So they have gotten free agents in this last, like, 10, 15 years. But ultimately, what the fans expect and a level of consistency, the Knicks haven't quite reached it yet. I like giving the Knicks mess. All the Knicks fans get sensitive because I like talking trash to them. But it's fun. Guys, I have no animosity towards the Knicks. Why would I? Well, you're better than them the entire time.
You beat them like a drum when you play
you
them.
By the way,
but Carmelo... But I'm saying that was out of respect. That was out of respect because we respected the Knicks and we respected the Garden and we wanted to bring our best when we were playing them, when we were playing in the Garden. And so that's what I was taught at a very young age. You want to show a lesser team respect, then go out there and don't take it easy on them. Go and let them know that you're superior.
By the way, Carmelo was actually a trade, so just to let you know that.
Yes, but via assets. Excuse me, and he also re-signed with them.
Yeah, and he demanded only to go there.
No, I understand.
I mean, there was nowhere else he would go.
Of course. Yeah, of course.
But if Denver, and you look, Denver has had that small market mentality, and look at what they've done. You just have to get some things right, and you have to have a level of professionalism and consistency. And I think the Knicks, I like Fizdale as a coach. I really do. I think David Fizdale is a very, very good coach. I've known this man for about 20 years. And so when I look at him as a coach, when I look at what they have as management, they just need patience. You look at what's gone on in Philly. You look at what's gone on in Brooklyn, right? These processes, it took about 3 years. It took about 3 years in order for that, and in order for that to really transpire. And so don't be too, it's been 2 years. It's going to take time in order to shift that. Even the Lakers, it took the Lakers 5-6 years to figure it out post the Kobe era.
We're talking to Richard Jefferson. Tomorrow night's game at Barclays Center will be on the YES Network. Pre-game's at 7 o'clock, telecast at 7:30. Richard will be doing the game on November 24th, Nets-Knicks. Lorenz and Frank Isola, our good buddy, in the studio for all that
Frankie.
Coverage.
Wow. Frankie Ice.
Now, I don't know if this is going to tick you off. It may tick Nick fans off. I have no idea, but I'm just being honest. A friend of mine a while ago asked me to make a comparison of R.J. Barrett, like a pro comparison. And for some reason, you popped into my head. So is that, in your opinion, a fair comparison? Do you like that comparison? Does that offend you? But I look at R.J. Barrett,
no.
And I can kind of see you. Your thoughts?
No, I think R.J. Barrett has a chance to be much better than I was. He has a chance to be much better than I was. That being said, right, like, I was more athletic. He's more skilled now, right now, than I probably was in the prime of my career. But I will say this about R.J. Barrett. As long as he is a piece, and that's the problem when you give the 19-year-old like keys to a franchise. Some of them turn out to be Luka Doncic, and some of them don't, right? And so, like, some of them turn out to be Trae Young, and that is not a knock. Some of them turn out to be Zion Williamson. I personally think that R.J. Barrett is a very good player. I think he needs to be put into a system, and I think he needs to understand that he is going to need team basketball. He is not a Luka that it's like, hey, we're going to give you the ball, you're going to score 40 points, you're going to get 12 assists, and you're going to make everyone around you better. I think R.J. Barrett is a player that could be a very good perimeter scorer, right? You look at Jason Tatum. Jason Tatum is great. Everyone loves him. He's not Luka. He's not Trey. Doesn't mean he can't be a nine-time All-Star, but he's not a guy you just hand the ball to. And so I think for Knicks fans, and I think the Knicks organization, I think teaching RJ Barrett the proper way to play basketball, how to get your teammates involved. Don't just give him 38 minutes and tell him to go score every single bucket that he can, because you're not going to teach him the proper NBA basketball just because he was the number three pick, just because he is quote unquote the best thing that you guys have going right now. You still have to teach him a level of responsibility and how we are going to win with your skill set moving forward.
What do you think about the West? Do you like the Lakers coming out of the West?
Man, I watched the Clippers last night and they look good. Montrez, Lou Williams pick and roll is deadly. Mm. And when you're going to have Kawhi and Paul George out there also. And it was like they ran a misdirection play last night that looked like a T. Lou special. They ran a misdirection play for Paul George to hit the three. To me, the Clippers are very, very good, and it'll come down to the size, right? The size of the Lakers versus the perimeter bodies that they have. Because understand that one of the keys to the Golden State Warriors' success against LeBron-led teams is that they had so many bodies to throw at Bron. Right, they had so many mm-hmm. different bodies, and I think they have so many bodies. Even Pat Bev, even being undersized, but you have Paul George, you have Maurice Harkless, you have Kawhi Leonard, you have a lot of body that you can throw at Bron to kind of slow him down a little bit. So if those two teams were to get into a postseason, it's going to be the Anthony Davis, Dwight Howard, JaVale McGee size that three-headed monster that they have. I think that'll be kind of the deciding factor. I think those two teams have established themselves as the best teams, most likely in the NBA.
Do you like the Melo fit in Portland?
I do, because they're in a desperate spot right now, because they understand you can't get too far back in the Western Conference. And I like it because they're in a tough spot now where Melo can't be made the scapegoat. Right, Melo can't be made the scapegoat. Like, hey, well, when you showed up, things started going wrong. It's like, no. But I also like it because I think Melo has humbled himself to a space of like, hey, I just want to play basketball. Whatever role it is, I know I can contribute, which mm-hmm. he can. He's still one of the more talented players in this league. He is still a matchup problem. He might not be able to give it to you every night, but he can give it to you once every three nights, which is very, very impressive. Especially for a man of his talent and age in the league. So I like it. Now, it's just a matter of it fitting, right? It's just a matter of fitting, and understand that Portland's going to get better. Once they get Yusuf Nurkic back, they're going to get better. But the only problem is you can't be seven games below 500 in the Western Conference trying to work your way back up.
You know, before we let you go, again, we're talking to Richard Jefferson. I got to tell you, this is coming from a Knicks fan now. The broadcast team of you, Sarah Kustak, and the great Ian Eagle is phenomenal. I just want to tell you that.
Well,
Ian's, you know, he's off the charts. You guys
Ian's
are terrific.
Off the charts.
Yep.
I want to say, Ian, I couldn't have been blessed any more to learn this craft from Ian and Sarah and Ryan Ruckel and Michael Grady and Frank DeGrace, who is the producer for our show, but he was been there since I was a rookie. And he was like, he called me like 7 years straight. Are you retiring? You retiring? I'm like, dude, I'm only 10 years in.
Right.
Said, well, as soon as you retire, you got to call me. And so, but for me, and the only way I can compare it is literally being drafted by the Nets and getting an opportunity to play with Jason Kidd, right? Where he sets you up. He just knows you want to go.
Yes.
He can maneuver to whoever style he's sitting next to, right? Like, I am not nearly as intelligent as Sarah Kustak. I am off the wall. I make stuff up. I'll be like looking at floating butterflies while the game is going on.
That's what makes you great.
And he'll just be like, Richard, are you here with me? No, hey, there's still a game going on.
Right.
And so to sit next to him and learn not only what's going on the court and how to handle it, because I'd never called a game before when I sat down next to him, to be able to do that. And then, you know, also when we're in our locker room or we're talking pregame and he's just telling me so much about the industry, about CBS, about football, he just lets me know the culture of the broadcast business. And that is far outweighs what I might learn from other people because he's so great.
This is now, you got to make a promise to Yes and make a promise to me. Don't be leaving us, okay? Because people, that these companies are going to throw big money at you. They're going to try to lure you to Chicago or L.A. or Midnight. I think they already did. They tried with
he
L.A.
He may wind up doing the NFL with Ian. You never know. Maybe see him on CBS doing the NFL.
That I don't mind as much.
I'm going to be really honest, right? You know, when I go and do national stuff, I'm as objective as possible. When I sit down with the Nets, there's a part of my heart that's there. There's a part of, you know, when I started and wanting to see those guys finish the job. And so I can't guarantee, but I will say this, like anytime I have a contract negotiation, working with the Nets is my number one caveat. Beautiful. That's my number one. If there is any way that I want, and I'm going to be calling games for ESPN this year. I'm calling Christmas Day. The Celtics versus Toronto in Toronto. So I'll be calling that Christmas Day game, which is an honor. I am so, very so cool. flattered. But no. I love the Nets. That's my family, and I don't hide it very well.
Well, if you want to host a talk show, let us know, okay?
Well, whenever you guys are ready to have me on, just let me know. And look, Knicks fans, if any of you are out there alive and listening, right, I don't hate you. I just like cracking jokes at your expense.
Fair enough.
We understand.
Big difference.
We understand.
RJ, you're the best. We appreciate it, man.
Richard, we appreciate it, man.
My pleasure, guys. Have a great day.
The great Richard Jefferson. Nets game tomorrow night. Pregame at 7. Telecast 7:30. Richard will be calling the action for the Knick-Net game on Sunday on the YES Network.